Stop your mom. Christy Rice. I told Marisol, your mom is whack. In the first place, I would never in a million years put my mother on television for the world to laugh at her, because they were not laughing with her. They were laughing at her. And then second, she should have stopped her mom, who didn't even know what she was saying. After filming wrapped, the show's fate hung in the balance as producers scrambled to try to fit the footage into the Housewives mold. Sherry Marufkani. It took 6 months to reshape it, reshoot interviews, and reframe them. We delivered the final masters, and they sort of put it on the shelf like, okay, we're going to figure out where we're going to slot this in the new year. But then they announced suddenly that the next season of New York wasn't ready, so they were going to launch Miami instead. So we only had 2 weeks promo time before we hit the air. Leah Black. They changed the show schedule to a different time every week, which had an effect on the following and ratings. Sherry Marufkani. It was only 6.5 episodes ultimately. They didn't even give it a real reunion. It was in the clubhouse for an hour. Andy Cohen. That was the first and last time we will ever do a reunion live. What a shit show. As production looked ahead to season two, it was clear many changes had to be made, both in front of and behind the camera. Sherry Marufkani. I got a call from Sherry Levine in May 2011, and she said, I respect you and I thank you for your work on the show, but it was a business decision for us. So they went with the safe bet because they had this overall deal with Matt and Nate at Purveyors of Pop. Nate Green, executive producer. It was sort of Matt's and my thing to come in on newer cities to tweak the casting, improve the storytelling, and improve the look of the show. Sherry Marufkani. It was devastating. I took it personally. I wanted to continue to explore these women's stories. But those stories would not include Larsa's and Christie's. Larsa Pippen. I had no interest in doing season two. Christy Rice. After the show, Larsa became a Kardashian groupie. Larsa Pippen. When I was on Housewives, it opened my eyes to opportunities. At first, I just thought it would be fun. But then I realized, hey, I'm growing from this. I learned a lot from it. And I started making money, my own money. As for Christy, the same complexities that made her life interesting were also why she had to ultimately exit the show. Matt Anderson. We liked Christy, but she wasn't able to shoot with her ex-husband or her kids. Christy Rice. Glenn made a problem out of everything. Matt Anderson. So that was the end of that. To be honest, we felt like bringing in some new people would probably create new intrigue and help the show in its second season anyway. RHOM got a new lease on life after a turbulent, uneven first season. But before the women could get to work, Alexia's life completely changed course when her 13-year-old son, Frankie, was involved in a horrifying car accident. Alexia Echevarria. We had just come back from Mykonos from a beautiful trip in Europe, and my son was starting school the next day. Nate Green. The accident was brutal, and so we all agreed that it would be easier for Alexia in that second season to ease into things. Alexia Echevarria. Of course, I was in a hospital from the day of the accident till 6 months later. Matt Anderson. There was always an intention for her to come back to season two as a main, but when we talked to her, she was like, let me just pull myself together. It was entirely Alexia's decision to go down to a B character. Alexia Echevarria. Viewers did see some of what I went through, but probably not even 5%. The producers really, really worked with me, and I'm very grateful for that. With Alexia sidelined and two Miami OGs gone, several new additions were brought in to shuffle the deck. Producers thought jet-setting model Joanna Krupa, who had initially auditioned for season one, would bring a certain wow factor to the series reset. Nate Green. Joanna Krupa was a beautiful model living in Miami part-time. Her story was so different from the others. She was engaged to a very sexy man who happened to be the owner of one of the coolest, longest-running nightclubs in South Beach, where he'd worked his way up from the bottom. He was half Brazilian, half French, and they were both self-made immigrants. They were dramatic, and their relationship wasn't perfect. Matt Anderson. She was also hosting Poland's Next Top Model. So she already had a vibrant TV career, and we thought of her as a get. Leah Black. Joanna told me they said they were going to make her the breakout star of the show. Nate Green. We definitely never looked at it like, oh, Joanna is going to be the star, but I knew she was going to make a splash. Also joining the ranks was plastic perfect, real-life housewife Lisa Hochstein, the honey-haired embodiment of a modern American fairy tale. Nate Green. Lisa Hochstein was a waitress working in Vegas who met this extremely successful plastic surgeon and won the lottery. Her life completely changed. Lisa Hochstein, housewife. When I did the show, I was very young. I was 27. I almost felt like I was too young to be a housewife. But of course, I didn't turn it down. It's somewhat of an honor to be chosen to be part of the show, because it's not just about whether I have a rich husband and nice things. It's also your personality that gets you in the door. Also in the business of beauty, celebrity dentist Karen Sierra joined the cast. But the other wives quickly began to wonder if her relationship with boyfriend Rodolfo Jimenez really had teeth. Nate Green. We love that Karen was a successful dentist. She kind of busted the stereotype of what a housewife was. Karen Sierra, housewife. The stigma behind a lot of the women in a lot of the franchises is that they're beautiful, but they're bored. Either their husbands are gay and they don't pay attention to them, or they've been married too long and their husbands don't pay attention to them, or they married for money and their husbands don't pay attention to them. I wanted to represent a professional Hispanic woman who stands on her own two feet. Leah Black. I know for sure that Marisol, Anna, and Adriana wanted to get rid of Karen. Karen Sierra. They created a mean girl club. They had diva attitudes from the beginning. Lisa Hochstein. The general consensus was that Karen was fake. Karen Sierra. I'm always a smiler, and that was something they attacked me on. I was like, I hope I'm smiling and I have good teeth. I'm a dentist. Nate Green. She wasn't married yet, but she was dating this really hot telenovela star, and that became a big topic of conversation. Alexia Echevarria. Karen lied about her whole story. Rodolfo was my friend, and he had a girlfriend. And Karen knew that, 100%. The producers wanted a Mexican for whatever reason. I said, sorry, but in Miami, there's really not too many Mexicans. We have Colombians, Venezuelans, Cubans, but the Mexicans stay on the West Coast. So Karen is like, oh, guess what? I have a Mexican boyfriend. He was a soap opera actor, and she called him up. Hey, you want to come on American TV? Karen Sierra. I could show pictures where I was with his family. I could show pictures of us kissing. I literally had pictures of him with my parents, pictures of him in my home, the two of us in Mexico. It made no sense that they questioned it. Alexia Echevarria. I did eventually call out Karen because I had a conversation with Rodolfo, and he was like, she told me that this was a perfect opportunity. She knew I had a girlfriend. If I hadn't been going through the seriousness that I was going through, there would have been big time drama. Anna Kinkosis also joined the cast in the second season. With a thriving career as a chef and a legal eagle history, she didn't have any problems mixing it up or making an argument. Anna Kinkosis, housewife. I'd known Marisol for a long time, but she and I were not friends. She only made an effort to become friendly with me once she knew I was going to be on the show. Marisol's mission was to make Leah look bad. And I was a total pawn in that in season two. Adriana De Mora. Leah was starting to attack Marisol, so Marisol wanted to attack back. Anna Kinkosis. Marisol was terrified of Leah, and of course, I was a perfect mouthpiece. So I fell for that hook, line, and sinker, because I wasn't afraid of Leah in the least. Leah doesn't pay my mortgage. In my world, Leah was meaningless. To them, Leah was somebody because they relied on Leah socially. so I became Marisol's protector. While the tension grew between Leah and Anna, another war broke out during, of all things, a charity lingerie party. Though Karen was the intended target, shots were fired and blows landed between Adriana and Joanna. Nate Green. Joanna and Adriana were definitely like oil and water. They did not get along. Leah Black. They were out for blood from day one. Adriana DeMora. This is the backstory of that scene. I was filming a movie, and I had been on set all day. It was almost 9 o'clock at night when I finally got to the party. And when I got there, the producers came to me with this article Karen had done, which was basically calling everyone on the show trashy and fake. And they said, did you see this? You need to confront Karen tonight. Nate Green. Producers are always getting blamed for planting things and telling people to say things. But we never tell anybody what to say or do. There was an article, and I'm sure there were conversations along the lines of, if you want to talk to her about it. Adriana DeMora. When I confronted Karen, Joanna came into it. I was just rolling my eyes saying, just back off, Joanna, back off. It's not about you. It has nothing to do with you. So I tried to leave, and then she followed me down the hallway. Matt Anderson. They grabbed a broom from somewhere in the kitchen and wrestled with it. It was sort of a standoff with this broom. Adriana DeMora. Joanna tried to grab me, and that's when I turned around and hit her. I slapped her on the face. Matt Anderson. Joanna's head hit the camera. Leah Black. I was flabbergasted. Lisa Hochstein. It was almost like Jersey Shore drama, like a little too far. If we hadn't been filming, everybody would have been thrown out of my house. Leah Black. After the slap, I went to lunch with Joanna to convince her to forgive Adriana. I did that to try to get the best for Adriana. What did I get in return? Marisol twisted it and said I was talking with Joanna, so Adriana turned on me. Adriana DeMora. Even though we had this history of friendship, Leah would side with Joanna and say, well, but Joanna was attacked. I was like, you are my friend, dude. Like, seriously? Leah Black. Adriana acted awful. She was jealous of Joanna. She wanted to be the main person on the show, and she was willing to do anything for that. Adriana DeMora. Suddenly, I became the big bad wolf. I was the bad guy, and everybody was out to get me. And the thing is, I don't think Joanna actually had anything against me. If we were just in regular life, we could have been friendly. Meanwhile, Marisol was also having a hard time, most especially because her marriage was unraveling. Marisol Patton. Season 2 was very hectic. I was doing a coffee line. I was running a business. I was filming. I had to help my mother film. I was stressed out and wasn't nice. I didn't have time to be a wife. Christy Rice. Everybody knew that marriage wasn't real. Leah called her out on it. Leah Black. I might have hit a sore spot because the minute filming was over, he left. Marisol Patton. The truth is, he left because I was being a bitch. I wouldn't kiss him. I didn't even want to sit and have a meal with him. He'd come into my office and I'd be like, don't you have somewhere to be? He just was getting on my nerves. So he left. He went to France for a while. Of course, I don't blame him. Leah Black. She didn't hear from him for months on end. Marisol Patton. Leah could say whatever she wanted. There was some jealousy there because she always wanted to be a successful business person known in the community like I was. But she's got plenty of money, and I would trade places with her in 2 seconds. People get jealous of the weirdest things. The season closed with a group vacation that was far from paradise for the housewives. Karen Sierra. You could see in some of the episodes, especially in Bimini, how Alexia and Marisol and Adriana were plotting to embarrass and attack me. Leah Black. They took me in the bathroom and showed me pictures of Karen's boyfriend kissing some other girl. They were trying to get rid of Karen because Adriana felt that Karen was her big competition. Karen Sierra. They were so malicious. It was especially cruel how they played that game of saying, "Oh, if we knew something, would you want to know?" It was like Mean Girls. Adriana De Mora. The whole story is, Adriana did this, and Adriana did that. Adriana didn't do that, didn't say that. And I lied about that. It was always like something, you know? I didn't care if that's what it took. If I'm in a movie, if I'm Angelina Jolie playing Maleficent, you know what I mean? Maleficent is needed for the movie to happen, so that's fine. I'll play that role. Anna Kinkosis. I did feel sorry for her because he used her to get on TV. She's a woman. She was in love, and she was played. It made me sad for her. Karen Sierra. I was in shock, and I remember even calling him, and he said, "No, honey, that's just a publicity stunt." He denied it all the way. If anyone was trying to take down Karen, they got what they wanted. She wouldn't be returning for season 3. Karen Sierra. I was in LA filming a Spanish TV show. I met up with one of the executive producers for lunch, and he said, "I just wanted to let you know we're not inviting you back." I was a little bit taken aback, but I figured they had their reasons. Lisa Hochstein. I wasn't surprised Karen didn't come back. I thought she had a great presence with me, but I guess there was a feeling she wasn't bringing it as much as she could have. But before Karen was let go, she had a front row seat to a nasty reunion battle between Leah and Anna, each of whom was convinced the other woman was out to get her. Matt Anderson. Anna came in hot, hot, hot for Leah. Anna Kinkosis. I flew to New York with Marisol. She had a really good relationship with the production company, and they told her that Leah was coming after me at the reunion. Leah Black. That was just not true! Matt Anderson. We certainly didn't tell Anna that Leah was coming for her at the reunion, but she did come prepared. Anna Kinkosis. I was like, coming after me for what? Look, I'm like Goody Two Shoes on steroids, so I didn't know what she was coming after me for. Matt Anderson. Anna was close with Marisol, and Marisol made it no secret that there was no love lost between Leah and her. So there was a little of that going on. Anna Kinkosis. So I called my ex-fiance, who was a former U.S. attorney and didn't like Leah, and I said, "Apparently Leah's coming after me." So he does this deep dive into her charity and all her history, like federal tax liens and everything she's ever done, and he compiles all this stuff. He goes, "Just read through it, have it under your belt. If she comes after you, you have plenty of ammunition." Leah Black. So she and her lawyer boyfriend did research, but there was nothing there. Anna Kinkosis. I had all this information that didn't make her look good. So I came on set at the reunion, and I had this folder in my hand. She looked at the folder and freaked out. Leah Black. She had this folder that I was told later was like 70% blank pages. She just wanted to intimidate me. It was stupid. She didn't have anything. Anna Kinkosis. All of a sudden, Leah started going after me. Maybe it was fake, maybe it wasn't, but she attacked me out of nowhere. She said, "Your husband cheated on you, you're so embarrassing, and you're doing his laundry," and I went off. Lisa Hochstein. The things that Anna said to Leah were super below the belt, disgusting. I still remember it to this day when she said, "The best work you did was on your back." I just remember thinking, what kind of person would say something like that to a married woman? Marisol Patton. I was floored, watching her with my eyes popped open. It was crazy. Anna Kinkosis. And that woman started crying. Leah Black. I was livid when she started in on the charity. I probably did have tears in my eyes. I was like, how low can you go? I've done nothing to you. I barely know you. I promoted your book. I tried to include your daughters in everything. I've never said one bad word about you on the show. Why are you coming at me about my charity? It infuriated me. Anna Kinkosis. She stormed off set. She hid in her dressing room and would not come out for hours until Roy got on the phone with her. Leah Black. A stipulation in my contract was that they couldn't talk about Roy's clients because at the time he was representing Alex Rodriguez. He had represented Kelsey Grammer, Marv Albert, Rush Limbaugh, a million famous people. Anna Kinkosis. And guess who else Roy represents? Leah Black. That stipulation also protected the charity. Anna Kinkosis. When that thing aired, it was a shadow of what actually happened. Andy Cohen. It was not entertaining to watch when it happened. And it wasn't entertaining edited down. That's the reality of the situation. Anna was so great all season long, but her reunion performance worked against her. Leah Black. In Anna's eagerness to bring me down, the audience didn't like her because she came across as nasty. She went too far. Marisol Patton. She was her own worst enemy. She tried to be too smart, and it wasn't entertaining. And you know what? Producers didn't like her, and they took her out. That they did. Anna was downshifted in season 3 as Alexia returned to full housewife status. But the biggest missing piece of season 3 was Miami's most beloved unofficial housewife. On the brink of filming, it became clear that Mama Elsa's declining health could no longer be ignored. Marisol Patton. She had a stroke, like the day we were supposed to start filming. But she already had dementia, and we didn't know it. The whole world was laughing with or at her, but she was actually quite progressed with dementia already. That's where a lot of her behavior came from. Nate Green. It was really sad to see her health diminish in that last season. Everyone loved her, the cast, the crew. She really had a lot of fun doing it, which is nice to see when somebody is doing this so late in life. Marisol Patton. When she had the stroke, it progressed at lightning speed. From one day to the next, she just wasn't walking, talking. She didn't know who anybody was. Meanwhile, Andy mentioned to me that people really watched to see my mom. And when she wasn't there anymore, it felt like my storyline just fell flat. Andy Cohen. Mama Elsa was the secret sauce of that show. You really felt her absence. Like Anna, Marisol was downgraded to friend of status for season 3. But Elsa's struggle continued long after cameras stopped rolling. Marisol Patton. For 8 years, she was in bed with a feeding tube and diapers, and she didn't know who anybody was. It was really hard. But I didn't let anybody know. I didn't want her to be remembered that way. Matt Anderson. When you take away all the outrageousness, theirs was a really great mother-daughter story to tell. There was something very real and relatable about a mother who wishes her daughter was doing more, wishes she was married, having kids, all of that. And then it was wrapped in this fabulous package of Marisol and Elsa, who were hilarious and funny together. Marisol Patton. It's the greatest gift to have those memories of her when she was alive on film. From start to finish, season 3 was dominated by I Do, as Adriana and Joanna each went full bridezilla, staging over-the-top weddings that got tongues wagging all over Miami. Lisa Hochstein. Adriana and Joanna had dueling weddings that were set up from the beginning to be competing against each other. Adriana De Mora. I definitely felt competitive with Joanna. I wanted to have the prettier wedding. Nate Green. Adriana has exquisite taste. Her wedding was really beautiful, but also outrageous because she's an outrageous person who was late to her own wedding. Not like slightly late, very late. Adriana De Mora. I actually got to the wedding early, but I have ADD. I struggle with time management. I just get so easily distracted. So I was trying to prepare, but then everybody was coming in to get ready in my suite. So that distracted me and I couldn't get myself ready. Nate Green. I tried to take it with a grain of salt because Adriana was born late. Adriana De Mora. By the time I really started to get ready, of course, we were very delayed. And on top of that, I felt like I was going to faint because I hadn't eaten anything all day. The stress and the pressure got to me, and my blood pressure went down. So that scene where I lay down was not fake at all. I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can walk to the church. Nate Green. We definitely told that story, which I don't think she was thrilled about in hindsight, because she was so late, many of the guests were annoyed with her. Adriana De Mora. It became TV gold. It was like a soap opera. I always look for the silver lining, and that actually gave season three something. Joanna's wedding raised eyebrows as well, since she and her fiancé had spent two seasons chronicling their relationship woes. Lisa Hochstein. I don't know if they would have gotten married if it wasn't for the show. Marisol Patton. Joanna would do anything for production. She knew what she was there for and did what she needed to do. Amid the wedding celebrations, one key friendship continued to fall apart. Adriana De Mora. It started after the lingerie party. At that point, Leah started to work against me. I did call her out, like, why are you besties with Joanna all of a sudden? You're not my friend like you're supposed to be. Leah Black. I'll put up with bad behavior for a long time, but if they're rotten to the core, or if it's intentional, then I'm kind of done. Adriana De Mora. Leah expected me to be her mouthpiece, which I did for years. My fight with Christy on season one was because Leah was annoyed at her. I was getting more uncomfortable attacking people for no reason if I didn't feel they did anything to me. But I did it because she was my friend. She was the one who introduced me to the producers, so I was grateful and loyal. But then, behind the scenes, people told me she was really angry at me because I was becoming one of the major protagonists of the show. Leah Black. I gave her clothes when she didn't have anything to wear. I fixed her up with a guy that had a private plane that flew her to Houston for dinner. Matt Anderson. Sometimes doing a show like this forces the women themselves to sort of question or think about things that are bothering them. It's a little bit like therapy. It can lead to breakthroughs. Adriana De Mora. To me, ending my friendship with Leah due to the stupidity of the show was the biggest loss of this whole thing. After a bitter, screaming reunion rolled around, there was no love lost between many of the ladies. And ultimately, the decision was handed down that it was last call for Real Housewives of Miami. Leah Black. I knew at the reunion of season three the show was not coming back. I saw the look on Andy's face. It was like the light went on. I could just tell he wasn't buying it. We were wrapping up around 5:30 or 6, and I knew when we walked out the door, the show's not coming back. Marisol Patton. In hindsight, if we'd all been a little bit smarter and not taken everything so seriously, I think we'd still be there. But you learn as you go along. We literally figured out what we were doing in season two, and then season three, we were done. Adriana De Mora. They said the show was going to be put on hiatus. We never got a big fat no. Marisol Patton. To this day, they haven't told us it's over. Leah Black. The other girls would run around trying to get pictures taken everywhere to look like they were all hanging out together in order to bring the show back. I was cringing. It was so thirsty and so desperate. Everybody in town knows we're not best friends. Alexia Echevarria. Sometimes you have to keep knocking on that door and show you want something. And I don't know about the other ladies, but I know Lisa, Marisol, and I would love to do it again. We haven't lost hope. Sherry Levine. Our viewers were really vocal about asking for the Real Housewives of Miami to return. And now we had the perfect opportunity to bring it back on Peacock. Anna Kinkosis. From the beginning of time, there's a total of like 117 housewives. And it's kind of a stupid comparison, but it's like when somebody is president of the United States, they will forever be called president. And a housewife will always be a housewife. It's a really cool select group that I'm proud to be a part of. Part 8. Chesapeake Babes. The Real Housewives of Potomac. Premiere date, January 17th, 2016. I always felt that if Bravo ever came to Potomac, beating the grass looking for housewives, my name would come to the top. Karen Huger. Cherise Jackson Jordan, housewife. Right out of the gate, I knew casting this show would be an uphill battle. Adrian Wells, casting director. The D.C., Maryland, Virginia area is not like New York City, Los Angeles, or Atlanta. People in this world don't want to be on TV. Andy Cohen. We'd done D.C. already, but when we were presented with this enclave of glamorous, successful women living large in Potomac, it seemed like both a perfect fit and a total left hook that the viewers wouldn't see coming. Who can imagine Potomac as our next destination? The women were definitely Real Housewives, though, and they had great pride in their community. Cherise Jackson Jordan. Adrian stressed they weren't looking to duplicate the Real Housewives of Atlanta, but wanted the Black version of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And to be quite honest, we don't flaunt our money like that. Adrian Wells. The area is very conservative. The women, they're not at all showy about their wealth. They don't throw on a pair of Louboutins and grab their Birkins to run to the grocery store. Cherise Jackson Jordan. I wasn't interested in doing the show at first, because my husband wasn't at all supportive. But I used to be president of the NBA Wives Association, so I have a lot of connections. I figured I'd help them with casting. One of my first calls was to Giselle, because I knew she would do it. Giselle Bryant, housewife. I'm an independent woman, so I didn't really consult too many people before agreeing to do the show. But I did have a conversation with my girls where I explained to them, doing a show like this is going to open me up to all kinds of criticism. There are going to be a lot of people who are going to love me, and also a lot of people who are going to hate me. They're going to say bad things about your mother. And they were like, Mom, we know who you are and love you no matter what. That made me feel confident moving forward. Lauren Eskelin. Giselle is a fascinating woman. She's whip smart, hilarious, speaks her mind freely, and when in conflict, will say very biting things without losing her temper or getting out of character. She's also very good at observing other people's worlds and commenting on it, without allowing anyone to comment on hers. And there was something interesting there. She was someone you could keep unraveling like an onion. Next up was Karen Huger, who would later become the self-proclaimed Grand Dame of the Potomac Housewives. Karen Huger, housewife. I always felt that if Bravo ever came to Potomac beating the grass looking for housewives, my name would come to the top. I was very confident about that. Lauren Eskelin. Karen is like a soap opera star. From the day I met her, when she came into the office draped in diamonds and wearing a mink coat, she was a feast for the eyes and so dramatic. The whole office kind of stopped and watched her float by. Adrian Wells. Karen was just like Giselle, in the sense that you knew she was a star. She had plenty of personality, plenty of story. She was living the life in this big house. Her kids were older, and we loved watching the kind of mother that she was. She was our Lisa Vanderpump. Not long after Karen joined, a former model and single mother of three named Katie Rost was contacted by casting. Katie Rost, housewife. From what I understand, Cherise was kind of acting as the unofficial casting agent for Potomac and suggested me. I wasn't even friends with Cherise, but she knew I was young, a hot mess, and had some issues in my life that would make a good story. Adrian Wells. At this point, I had built a mostly Black cast, and I wanted to find a group of multidimensional Black women of all ages. Katie reminded me of a lot of Black girls I went to school with, growing up in a suburban area. I liked that she was originally from Potomac, almost like she was the adult version of the children Giselle, Karen, and Cherise were raising here. With openings still to fill, Giselle passed along the name of one of her best friends, Robin Dixon, a divorced mother of two, still sharing a home and a bed with her ex-husband and childhood sweetheart, NBA player Juan Dixon. Robin Dixon, housewife. The way I remember it, both Giselle and Cherise contacted me at the same time. They were like, Bravo's doing a show. We think you should talk to them. Lauren Eskelin. Aside from being drop-dead gorgeous, Robin had an undeniably fascinating story. She was living with her ex-husband and sleeping with him in the same bed. That wasn't a story ever told on Housewives, let alone reality TV. And she emerged that first season as a fan favorite because she was the audience proxy who represented what viewers wanted to know. She was very relatable. By this point, Charisse had come around and agreed to join the cast. The final addition was Ashley Darby, a spirited 26-year-old former beauty queen married to an Australian real estate developer 29 years her senior. Katie Rost. They brought Ashley in after we'd been filming for about a month. Adrian Wells. Ashley felt different. She was younger than all the other women. I liked the big age gap between her and her husband, and she felt like a housewife. I liked that she was free and open. Charisse Jackson Jordan. I really embraced Ashley from the jump. I thought she was perfect and that she and her husband, Michael, brought a lot to the show. Giselle Bryant. It took me maybe half the season before I could appreciate Ashley for who she is. Like, I didn't understand her at all. All I knew was she was this young girl married to this old white man, which didn't make sense because she came off like the antithesis of someone who would be married to a man 30 years older than her. She's so smart and driven and wanted to own her own business. I was like, you are not a quintessential gold digger. What are you doing here? Ashley Darby, housewife. I'm no dummy. I've watched Housewives shows. I've seen the dynamic. I understand how each person in the franchise brings something different. There's always someone on the quirky side, and I was the designated quirky one. Giselle Bryant. Ashley is someone who gets under your skin. Either you love her or hate her. I love her. Karen hates her. Katie Rost. Karen felt nervous because she's the oldest and was already being made fun of behind the scenes for the extreme she was going to in order to look younger. Botox, plastic surgery. She used to wear tape under her wig that pulled her face tighter, like Sunset Boulevard or something. Ashley Darby. I'll never forget going shopping with Karen at South Moon Under. She shaded me right from the beginning because she said her daughter Raven shops there. I was like, point being? I guess it wasn't age appropriate to her, so she had to make it known. And then she gave me a whole lecture about Potomac society and how I needed to have a certain etiquette. It was like, what? Who made you the president of Potomac? Did I miss the memo? Ashley wouldn't be the only person to get a lesson in etiquette from Karen. As filming began, etiquette became a hot topic among the cast, for better or worse, kicking off a bitter rivalry among Karen, Giselle, and Charisse. Andy Cohen. Part of the reason they didn't shut up about etiquette was because Karen Huger was always carrying on about etiquette and society. Karen Huger. Well, etiquette still is a part of us, believe it or not. These ladies need to know how to behave and conduct themselves. That's a big part of Potomac. And me, being the matriarch, of course, I was the one reading the rules of etiquette, as I still do sometimes. Ashley Darby. It struck me as odd, Karen's constant schooling. It was a self-appointed authority that felt a little delusional to me. Giselle Bryant. I didn't understand it. Karen and I were always cool, but then the cameras started rolling and the whole etiquette thing was thrown in my face. Karen Huger. Oh my God, Giselle and I, season one? Our butting heads was harmless, but it was very real. Giselle Bryant. Karen got mad at me right from the get-go. You saw it in that first episode. She told me she was upset about her birthday party because we went to a restaurant and I sat in the middle. Hello? The producers told me to sit there. They were like, Giselle, you sit in the middle. We were basically set up to set her off. Joshua Brown, Vice President, Current Production, NBC Universal. I remember filming that first episode and watching from Video Village with the producers. We were really surprised when Giselle sat there and didn't offer the seat to Karen. Karen Huger. She sat in my seat. She needed to get up. Giselle Bryant. I was shocked. We were at Charisse's house, and she gave me a gift of this mirror with all these etiquette rules on it. I was like, this woman is crazy. Karen Huger. She never did it again, though. Giselle Bryant. The Karen that I knew before the show would not have been that bent out of shape over where we were sitting in a booth. The Karen I know now, that's definitely what she would do. She's morphed into the character that she created, no question. Robin Dixon. There was definitely some sort of unspoken rivalry between Karen and Giselle, but Charisse was in that mix too. It was like the three of them, the three eldest women competing for this. I don't even know what it was. But they knew how to push each other's buttons, and they got a kick out of it. Charisse Jackson Jordan. It wasn't me so much, it was Karen and Giselle. There's a lot of ego at play among those women. All the time. Everybody wants to be in the center of the intro or in the middle of the photo, and they wouldn't fight about it outright because that's against etiquette. But they would try to position themselves in those places. It's hilarious. Karen Huger. Relationships grow, and Giselle and I are growing. The viewers get to grow with us. Sometimes it's fun shade, sometimes it's painful shade. We ebb and flow. Giselle Bryant. As much as we go at it, with Karen and me, there's a level of respect there. Our history has sustained us. As Karen, Giselle, and Charisse tackled etiquette issues, Robin navigated something much more serious when her financial issues were brought up by Ashley behind her back, a move that led to an off-camera blow-up viewers never saw. Robin Dixon. You have to understand. On one of the first phone calls I had with production, I remember being asked, is there anything off the table? And I said, when it comes to Juan, his personal business, and his financial issues, they're not on the table. He doesn't want to talk about any of that. Ashley Darby. You can't really do that. Katie Rost. Ashley and I filmed at a park so she could meet my kids. But before she came over, Ashley was talking to producers for probably 30, 40 minutes. We were there for a very long time. While we were on the swing set, Ashley brought up Robin's finances, claiming she had Googled them. Ashley Darby. I tried to convey it in a more caring way, like, oh, I didn't know this about Robin, but in hindsight, no matter how I said it, it was going to look like I was being shady. Katie Rost. Ashley was like, why is this Silver Spring, Baltimore, ghetto-ass girl trying to pretend like she has anything? Her comments were really nasty. Giselle Bryant. Later that night, Katie, Robin, and I were sitting in a car together, waiting to get mic'd up to film at Charisse's house. There weren't cameras on us or anything, and out of nowhere, Katie turns and tells Robin, oh, by the way, Ashley spilled all your business. Robin Dixon. I was livid. I went berserk. Eric, our producer, came into the car to get us mic'd up, and I flipped. Katie Rost. She went crazy. I wish they had a camera because this girl got out of the car, went over to Eric, and flipped out on him. She was pointing her finger. She was like, I told you not to fuck with me like this and not to talk about my shit. I trusted you, and you guys are motherfucking liars. Robin Dixon. After that happened, I knew in my mind Ashley didn't do this on her own. It had to be producer-driven. Joshua Brown. The cast always wants to think that producers are pulling strings, but it's just not the case. Producers are reactive. They want the women to react to what they are seeing happening in their real lives, not a fabricated one. Katie Rost. Then she left. She refused to film that night. Giselle Bryant. I looked at Katie afterward and she said, oh no, was it something I said? I was like, I'm going to wring your neck, Katie, because whatever you said sent Robin to a place that we never want to see again. Robin is so sweet, but when you set her off, it is over. Ashley Darby. I had no idea Robin told production she didn't want to talk about this. I had no clue. Lorraine Houghton Lawson. Executive producer and senior vice president of programming, Truly Original. Ashley is an interesting housewife. She's not looking for fame. She just thinks it's a fun thing to do. When you're like that, there's nothing that's not on the table for you because you don't really care. You're not worried about losing your job. You're not worried about keeping your job. You're not catering to a fan base. You're not worried about what your husband might say. That's what makes her so fun to watch. She can do whatever she wants because she's not beholden to anyone. After filming wrapped on season one, the debate among producers and the network became what to call the show. Joshua Brown. We tossed around Real Housewives of Montgomery County. Andy Cohen. We played around with the zip code. We were maybe going to call it the Real Housewives of whatever zip code that was. Lauren Eskelin. We kept coming back to the Real Housewives of Potomac because that's where we were and that's what made sense. Andy Cohen. And they all wouldn't shut up about how great Potomac was, which pride in one city is a hallmark of a housewife show. Joshua Brown. There was a lot of discussion of how can you make a Real Housewives show about a place that nobody's ever heard of? Andy Cohen. I thought it was the most genius curveball to call it the Real Housewives of Potomac. It just seems so weird. And for everyone who thought they knew what the next city was going to be, it was like, there's no way anyone would have guessed Potomac. The Real Housewives of Potomac premiered in January 2016, earning strong ratings and immediate comparisons to RHOA. Joshua Brown. We let it out from The Real Housewives of Atlanta, and it did really well. In my eyes, anytime a show survives its first season, it's a success because it's so hard to launch new series. Giselle Bryant. It was great that we were right behind RHOA. Obviously, that gave us a big push, even though to this day, I feel like everyone wants to compare us to RHOA when there is no comparison. Why do you have to compare the two black shows? Katie Rost. We were so different than the Atlanta Housewives, and the producers, because they also worked on RHOA, didn't understand Potomac at first. They didn't get the culture here, and they were trying to impose Atlanta culture on Potomac. They didn't understand the nuances of how we shade each other. It took them a bit to get used to us. Ashley Darby. Production wasn't really too sure about us that first season. They wouldn't even spend money to take us on an international vacation. Other casts go to Greece or South Africa. You take us to Bethany Beach, Delaware? Cherise Jackson Jordan. The RHOA Housewives didn't support us either. Giselle Bryant. Because we share a production company, they were sent pictures of our franchise with a request of, hey, can you post about them and ask people to watch? And they didn't give us no love. Lauren Eskelin. We asked the RHOA cast to tweet and post about the show. We even sent them the first episode in advance of the premiere. And they all said, sure, sure, sure. And then no one did a thing. It was very icy. In preparation for season two, casting once again sought out potential housewives. A new addition was Monique Samuels, mother of two and wife of NFL offensive tackle Chris Samuels. Monique Samuels, housewife. I was never a person who thought I would be on reality TV, even though since Chris and I have been dating, all of our friends used to tell us, y'all need your own reality show, because we're very real, we're very open, we have a strong friendship, and we don't hold back. But I just never took that seriously. Like, when they first started airing promos for the show, Chris would tease me, oh, that's right down the street. We have friends in RHOP. You could be on that show. Karen Huger. They were a young couple, and they had young children. That energy added another dimension to The Real Housewives of Potomac, which was a huge asset. Cherise Jackson Jordan. Chris was successful, too. He kept giving me money to gamble with, $100 a pop, like, here you go. I was like, oh, I like these people a lot. They're much better than the others. Joshua Brown. We were exploring a circle of athletes within the D.C. area who all sort of know one another. You had Chris Samuels, who spent his NFL career on the Washington Redskins, and he kind of ran in the same circles as Cherise's ex-husband, Eddie, a retired basketball player who was a former coach of the Washington Wizards, and then Juan Dixon, who played in the NBA for the Washington Wizards as well. There was a natural connection there. Meanwhile, Katie was moved to a guest role in season two. Katie Rost. I was having a lot of personal problems dealing with my ex-husband. For some reason, my ex-husband thought I was making millions on the show, so he went back to court and was riding my ass every day. Do you know how exhausting that is on your spirit? I couldn't pretend everything was okay anymore. Joshua Brown. It didn't feel like Katie wanted to share what was going on in her life. Robin Dixon. Katie also became very difficult to film with. In season two, she did her Casino Royale charity event, and I remember hearing that her mother was cussing everybody out the entire time, screaming her head off at producers. At some point, they just realized it wasn't worth the trouble. Monique wasn't exactly welcomed by everyone. Early on, she and Giselle clashed, a rivalry quickly forming that lasted for years to come. Monique Samuels. When I first watched the show, I thought I would get along with everyone, including Giselle. She seemed like a fun, cool chick. I didn't think I was going to have any issues. But if you look back, the only person I didn't meet at Katie's event was Giselle, and that's because they purposely kept us apart. They knew there would be conflict. Joshua Brown. Giselle left the event early that night, and production was frustrated she didn't get to meet Monique. There were about 200 guests there, and one of them was a woman who approached Giselle and claimed they were dating the same guy. Giselle thought production put the woman up to this, which could not be further from the truth. We were like, who is this woman? That's why Giselle left. Giselle Bryant. Monique and I first met at the Willard Hotel, where we had that infamous high tea. Monique Samuels. This was my first time talking to Giselle, and she ended up being all shady. We were talking about where I was living, and she made the comment, "Oh, you don't have a home?" Giselle Bryant. She said, "I'm looking for a home." And my immediate reaction was, "Oh, you don't have one? That's a logical follow-up question." And I didn't mean anything by that, but they didn't show it that way. Monique Samuels. I'm from Jersey. I'm married to a football player. I've been around football wives who talk trash all the time. When she said it that way, I knew immediately she was throwing shade. And I could have easily just said, "No, I have a home." But I was like, "Nah, forget that. Let me just go ahead and do what I do." So I said, "I have four homes. How about you?" You know, caught that and threw it back. Giselle Bryant. That 10 seconds, everyone has run with that until the cows have come home. Oh my God, Giselle hates Monique. Today? Yes, I do hate Monique. But I didn't then. Ashley Darby. I liked Monique when I first met her, but I really respected her after the tea party because she stood up for herself without insulting anybody. Giselle Bryant. I didn't care anything about her, but for whatever reason it became, "I'm jealous of Monique, I hate her." Sharice Jackson Jordan. That's because Monique, for whatever reason, she thinks everybody is jealous of her or wants something from her. It's like, no, honey, nobody wants that life of yours. Giselle Bryant. Meanwhile, she was at that tea, rapping in the middle of this fancy hotel. Monique Samuels. They literally begged me to rap for them. I kept saying no, but of course, they never showed all of that. Even my producers were like, "Please, just do it." Giselle Bryant. Production was not pushing her to rap. She brought that up. We were asking her questions about herself, and she said she was a rapper. Somebody said, "Oh, well, then rap." And I thought she was going to be like, "Oh, gosh, no, this is not the time or place." Monique Samuels. They rolled back all of the comments of them saying, "I can't believe she's rapping at the Willard." I'm like, "What? Y'all begged me to." Giselle Bryant. I felt sorry for her, to be honest with you, because she was really trying so hard. It's like anybody who tries that hard, maybe they shouldn't really be there. Tensions between Sharice and Giselle were also riding high in season two, after Giselle alleged on Watch What Happens Live that both Charisse and her now estranged husband, Eddie, were unfaithful in their marriage. Monique Samuels. Charisse wasn't ready to discuss what was happening between her and Eddie, but that didn't stop Giselle. Charisse Jackson Jordan. My marriage was in trouble well before Giselle opened her mouth. Eddie didn't want anything to do with the show from the beginning. I knew he'd be that way, and honestly, when I first called him and told him they asked me to do the show, I hoped he'd beg me not to do it so that we could focus on our relationship because our marriage was not in a good place. Instead, he said, well, if you do it, we'll probably get a divorce. Adrian Wells. Charisse knew her marriage couldn't be repaired. Doing the show was kind of her way to get out of it. Charisse Jackson Jordan. I did do the show to escape Eddie, but I wasn't allowed to because that's all they would focus on in my edit. I was put in this role of a stressed out woman dealing with her bad marriage. Ashley Darby. In hindsight, I'm sure having all her business on international television wasn't easy. She wasn't able to be fully present in the moment and in the experience, and that was really palpable. Charisse Jackson Jordan. For me, that first season was crap. I don't even remember much of it. And then all of a sudden, in season two, I was getting this divorce and I was like, oh shit. Eddie and I were together for 27 years. That's not something you easily walk away from. Add to that Giselle talking all these lies, it was a lot. Giselle Bryant. Charisse and I have gotten to a wonderful place now because she was able to look back and realize that I was never really trying to hurt her. Charisse Jackson Jordan. The only reason I moved past it with Giselle was because the production team and the network execs all told me, you need to make up with her. You gotta let it go. Giselle Bryant. I was just calling Charisse out on her stuff. That's the show. Had she said to me, Giselle, chill out. I'm going through a divorce. This isn't helping. There's a whole lot I would not have said. Also in season two, Robin reached the end of her rope with Ashley's continued probes into her unconventional relationship. Frustrated, she and Giselle paid a visit to see Ashley at her since-shuttered Australian-themed restaurant, Oz. Robin Dixon. I didn't anticipate I'd go off on Ashley in that moment. I just wanted to be like, look, you need to cut this shit out. I don't know what your obsession is with my family, but you need to leave me alone. Ashley Darby. Robin was upset because I was saying she needed to get out of this relationship. She was being a ride or die, and the other person in her relationship was not riding for her. And Robin, she didn't like hearing that. Robin Dixon. When we first saw Ashley at the restaurant, she gave us that, hey guys, greeting all happy and chipper. And it just pissed me off even more. I was like, this bitch. Giselle Bryant. I knew it would be highly confrontational, but I didn't expect Robin to get up in Ashley's face like that. Robin Dixon. It wasn't my intention to make it some crazy argument, but my emotions took over. Ashley Darby. I won't lie, I wasn't happy because this was my business, you know? It's a dining environment. Ask me to come outside or go in the back or something. Giselle Bryant. It was everything. We rolled in, Robin explained to Ashley how she felt, and we were out the door. It was epic. I freaking love that scene. Season 3 brought the introduction of Candace Dillard Bassett, a sassy and savvy former Miss United States, entrepreneur, and aspiring singer-actress engaged to chef Chris Bassett. Adrian Wells. Candace was hilarious. She was very real and honest about her relationship with Chris. Her relationship with her mother was interesting. And most importantly, she was opinionated. She didn't shy away from speaking freely and directly. Candace Dillard Bassett, housewife. You're going to think I'm crazy, but I swear I got the show because I prayed for it. When the show first started airing, I remember watching and being like, why the fuck am I not on this? Where was I when they were casting? Because I grew up watching RHOA and was so excited to see another all-black Housewives ensemble. But as entertaining as the show was, it was also a bit dull, and I knew I could spice it up and show another facet of Black women. I have this couch at the foot of my bed where I pray, and I got down on my knees and said, "Lord, if this is something that is an opportunity for me to help accomplish my goals and make my dreams reality, can you make this happen?" Noah Sampton. We had real expectations that Candace and Ashley were going to be buddy-buddy, since they're both younger and came from that pageant world. But it really didn't play out that way. Karen Huger. I loved Candace when we first met. She was fun, bubbly, energetic, articulate, and bright. Immediately we bonded. Monique Samuels. Nobody liked Candace when the show first aired. They all thought she was immature and a little girl. They tried to ice her out the same way they did my first season because she's just immature. Candace Dillard Bassett. I learned early on, when you're on this show, everybody is given a box, whether you want it or not. You're kind of forced into this space and you have to exist there. There can sometimes be wiggle room, like if the story makes sense, they'll allow you to shift into a different box. But it's rare that you're allowed to just be a real person. For me, the box was that I'm a spoiled, rotten princess. Everything is centered around me being a brat. Meanwhile, I'm literally the only housewife on my cast who had all of my businesses before I was on the show. That season, Charisse was moved to a friend role and ultimately was not asked to return. Charisse Jackson-Jordan. I wasn't getting divorced fast enough for them. That was the problem. But that's not how my divorce worked. I had to go to court. There was a trial. Candace Dillard Bassett. It would have been different if Eddie filmed, but he would not sign off on filming anything with her. What was she supposed to do? She can't control her husband. Charisse Jackson-Jordan. I was trying to get them to tell another story about me, but the producers, they weren't interested in nothing Charisse. Like, I found out my kids have other siblings that we never knew about, and I wanted them to meet one another for the first time on the show. To me, that was raw, honest, real-life shit. Andy Cohen. I always liked Charisse. I thought having her on, she could give Karen a run for her money. But I lost that battle. The viewers didn't really connect with her. She came off kind of snobby and full of herself. And producers and the execs at Bravo felt like we should change things. Charisse Jackson-Jordan. There's this perception from the public that I pulled back from the show while I was going through my divorce. I didn't pull back. They pulled me back. Robin Dixon. I feel bad for Charisse because Charisse really is the reason why we're all on this show. Ashley Darby. Charisse is the president of Potomac. She had the connections. She knew everybody. Charisse Jackson-Jordan. I knew I wouldn't be a housewife that season right from the beginning. They told me they didn't want me to tell anybody, which was weird for me because I was still filming full-time and no one knew. Eventually, I started to fill people in. I told Monique, I told Robin, like these people were my real friends. It's not like some of the other franchises like Atlanta, where it's a job and you come and film with these people and then go home. Robin's been my friend for 18 years. Giselle's been my friend for what, 15, 16 years? We have history together. Giselle Bryant. I fought to keep Charisse big time. Unfortunately, in the end, there was nothing I could do. Charisse Jackson-Jordan. And I will say, there were some upsides to being a friend. There's much less pressure to film. That season, I went to New York and stopped to see some Bravo executives, and they were like, "Aren't you supposed to be at work?" I was like, "I'm a friend. I'm not on the calendar. I only get two scenes. Life is good." Even without Charisse, there was plenty of drama in Potomac, including the headline-making news that Karen's husband, Ray, aka the Black Bill Gates, owed nearly $1.5 million in back taxes, on top of the more than $3 million his company owed. Joshua Brown. The story about Ray's tax issues was reported in the Washington Post before we even started filming. And that was the moment we realized our show was bigger than this little world we were filming in. That's when we saw ourselves crossing over into the pop culture lexicon. Giselle Bryant. Karen was trying to keep her financial issues off camera. Her life was falling apart, and we were all supposed to act like it's not happening? No, we were going to talk about it. Karen likes to live her life in a fantasy she's created, but I choose not to live on Fantasy Island. I live in reality. Karen Huger. Everything you've ever witnessed between Ray and me on this platform was trying for us. But all marriages have challenges, and we have always taken our challenges head on. We fight for our marriage, and that's why we're winning. Another season 3 storyline involved Monique and an off-camera car accident she got into hours after filming a scene with Ashley. Monique Samuels. When the accident happened, we had all been out filming a scene, me, Ashley, and Candace. When filming wrapped, Ashley and I went to have a drink. I'm a very slow drinker, but over the course of our time there, I ordered 3 drinks, including a Moscow Melon, which I sent back for a martini because I didn't like it. Candace Dillard Bassett. I had to leave to film more, but they were done for the day, so they said, "We're going to go to the bar and have a drink." And I wasn't there, I didn't see it, but I've witnessed Monique driving after she's been drinking in the past. Monique Samuels. I would never get behind the wheel if I was intoxicated. I didn't even feel drunk. But I had been up since 4 that morning. We just moved into the new house, I didn't have a nanny for the kids, and I was managing all the finances of the rental properties, plus starting my business, plus working on the board of a charity, all while filming this reality show. And I had just had a miscarriage weeks earlier. I was exhausted. And as I was driving, the day just hit me and I felt myself start to doze off. I tried to roll down the windows and turn the music up again to keep myself up, but it happened again, and when I opened my eyes, I was headed straight for a tree. Luckily, I swerved and wound up in a ditch, but the car still had something like $40,000 in damages, and I got whiplash and a mild concussion. Candace Dillard Bassett. I believe that she was drunk, and I believe that she fell asleep because she had too much to drink. Monique Samuels. Ashley kept saying I had 4 martinis. But anytime I'm out drinking and I'm driving, I limit myself. Candace Dillard Bassett. Then when we went to Nema Colon, that's when she drank the whole bottle of Camus by herself, if you remember. And Ashley brought it up there. Monique Samuels. What they didn't show was that when we were at Nema Colon, right before Ashley started lying about how many drinks I had, I told the group about my miscarriage. I'm not a vulnerable person, and I actually allowed myself to be vulnerable with them. And in that moment, what did they do? They disregarded what I said and started bashing me from left to right. Oh, you had 4 drinks. Oh, you crashed your car because you were drunk. I was like, are you kidding me? Robin Dixon. Monique was totally fine with Ashley and the discussion about her drinking when it was brought up in Nema Colon. That night, we were in a hot tub up all night, chit-chatting and smoking cigars and having fun. But then, we're back home and she comes to Karen's perfume event all pissed off. I was looking at her like, what the fuck is your problem? Why are you mad all of a sudden? Monique Samuels. I actually didn't want to go to Karen's scent event because I was very hot with Ashley. But I wanted to celebrate my girl Karen, so I said to myself, I'm gonna go and not say anything. This will be the quietest Monique they'll ever witness because I don't want to be pushed off the cliff. I don't want to go over the edge. And that's how it was until everyone started coming for me. Ashley Darby. She got upset. She started saying things about me. I started saying things about her. And the whole situation just spun so far out of control. Robin Dixon. Her anger to me was hilarious. If Monique was really mad, she should have said something in the moment, but she wasn't. She was just worried about the perception the audience would have about her drinking and driving. That's why I was laughing. It was all performance. By the time we were on the street, I was really cracking up. Candace Dillard Bassett. Next thing we knew, Monique was choking Robin out with an umbrella. Monique Samuels. I tried to walk away, but Robin and Giselle were instigating, arguing back at me and doing what they do, talking trash. I called them Pinky in the Brain, and then Robin got upset and got into my face. I was like, you better back up out of my face before I hit you with an umbrella. Robin Dixon. I wasn't worried she was going to do anything. I knew she was all talk. Monique Samuels. Ashley later gave me an apology, a real one, but not until she went through something similar with Candace. Monique is referring to Ashley's feud with Candace in season 4, which began when Candace began questioning Ashley's drinking amid her attempts to get pregnant again after a miscarriage. Candace Dillard Bassett. She told me in that scene at Oz that she was not going to drink because she was trying to get pregnant. But then every time I looked, she was throwing back a Corona Light. That to me says that you're not trying to get pregnant and have a baby. Ashley Darby. Say anything you want about my relationship, my marriage, me, my finances. That's par for the course, in my eyes. But when Candace started being so vocal and attacking my pregnancy journey, that for me was a line. Robin Dixon. Talking about my finances was a line, but Ashley didn't mind that. Ashley Darby. But money is something a person will not have today and may have tomorrow. Losing a child and going through a miscarriage? I'm not going to get that baby back. That's a permanent loss I have to deal with. Don't make a mockery of it. Candace Dillard Bassett. Ashley was doing her job by making a big deal out of something that she honestly just didn't care about. She was yelling, she was loud, and I looked like the villain, even though I was making the same statement to her face that everybody was making behind her back. Giselle Bryant. Candace really wanted to be BFFs with Ashley off camera, and when Ashley was like, I'm not really feeling you like that, it hurt Candace. They are two little pageant girls. Candace is over it now, clearly, but that was the source of their issues. The feud between Ashley and Candace spilled over to Candace's house, where a dinner party Candace's husband Chris was throwing turned into one of the most jaw-dropping scenes in Potomac history. Robin Dixon. That whole party went left fast. We were supposed to be talking about the fact that Michael had said one night while we were out drinking, yeah, I would suck Juan's dick. That was the real elephant in the room we needed to discuss. But Ashley immediately brought up the comments Candace made about her miscarriage. Candace Dillard Bassett. We had been at Monique's rainbow baby shower, and Ashley and Michael were once again putting on a whole performance. So I let them know. Ashley Darby. Candace crossed a line. Candace Dillard Bassett. Of course, Ashley had to tell me, I'm in your mama's house, because once again, it was all about painting me as this spoiled brat. But that set me off because it was like, bitch, your entire life is a dumpster fire, and it's on display for everybody to see, so leave me and my privileged Black American princess ass alone. Robin Dixon. Then it was like, boom, here comes Candace, slamming a butter knife on the table and kicking Ashley out of the house. Candace Dillard Bassett. I had been drinking red wine all day. I had zero inhibitions about climbing on top of the table and telling this bitch to get the fuck out of my house, period. Monique Samuels. This is when I started to feel unsafe around Candace. If she would wave a knife in somebody's face to the point where she literally could have cut her. Candace Dillard Bassett. I was never going to stab anyone with that butter knife. Nor did anyone think I was, by the way. If they had been truly frightened by my actions, you would have seen it on their faces. They wouldn't have been sitting there calmly looking at me. Monique Samuels. I didn't say much then because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I've never seen a grown person acting like that. Kicking and screaming, having this outburst, that's crazy behavior. Ashley Darby. There is a pressure for more explosive interactions as you go on in the seasons. And in that moment, Candace was really trying to instigate a physical fight with me. That's why she threw the butter knife at me. Candace Dillard Bassett. My plan was to take Ashley's purse to the door and throw it outside, like over the steps into the street, to get her to leave. But Chris was like, you need to calm down. He was sitting on me, pulling me away. So launching the knife was my way of saying, okay, I'm not going to get back over there and really cuss her out, so let me just throw this in frustration and make her leave. Monique Samuels. It was way, way worse than what they showed. Her husband was literally sitting on top of her to restrain her, and she was punching him and mushing him with her elbow, trying to get to Ashley. Giselle Bryant. By the way, you're welcome for the butter knife scene. Candace Dillard Bassett. Giselle likes to think she produced that whole damn thing. Giselle Bryant. I push the story down the road. I want the truth, and I know how to get it. Ashley Darby. Giselle thinks she should be in the credits, to be honest. She gives herself a lot of credit for orchestrating things. And you know, to be fair, she does. Giselle Bryant. I don't want it to be boring. Nobody wants to watch that. Lauren Eskelin. Giselle will not leave without getting the information she wants. And in that sense, she's a great producer of other people's stories. It's when it comes to her own story that she clams up. Giselle Bryant. In this case, when Ashley got thrown out, I knew I had to bring her back in because guess what? We were supposed to be talking about Michael and what he said about the penis that he wanted to suck. That had not happened yet. Candace Dillard Bassett. I had to ask Ashley to leave repeatedly. Meanwhile, everyone paints me as the angry, out-of-control black woman who wants to stab people with knives. Get out of my house. You were asked to get out. Troubles between Candace and Ashley wound up affecting Candace and Monique's friendship, too. When Monique stood up for Ashley, it led to a massive argument during a country hoedown. And Monique's now infamous.